We're back with more Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
I think going back to that point, this past week, you know, there was multiple chances here, especially on some of the second and longer situations where, took a nice completion to Rome on a shallow cross, where Rome's able to take a 5-yard completion and turn it into a 10-yard gain right there. Another one to Swift, another one to Keenan. So he had different chances there where, along with a couple checkdowns on some play actions, where he did a really good job of staying clean against, whatever defensive front structure was occurring on those plays, getting the ball out of his hand and letting those guys go to work right there. And so then it'll be the next step is, that balance of that versus, when's the time to go down the field with some of the throws.
There's Bears offensive coordinator Shane Waldron talking about some of the progress he's seen in the offense from his rookie quarterback, his rookie wide receiver. What is that it was playing over? I like that. It's a funky little guitar riff you got there.
Huh? This is MF Doom, Rap Snitch, Knishes.
There you go. Sean Sears on the ones and twos. For the Score Evening Show tonight, I am Rami Makhlouf alongside Hub Arkish. We'll get back to some of your calls and texts in just a little bit. But joining us now on the Circus Sports Hotline from the Athletic Football Show, it's a pleasure to welcome in Derek Klassen. Derek, how are you this evening, man?
It's Friday evening. I'm feeling good. How are you guys?
Good. I think we talked a couple weeks ago and I asked you, what, if any, progress you had seen from Caleb Williams and the Bears offense at that point. And the answer in a nutshell was not much, not a whole lot of movement forward. A lot of folks feeling like they took a step forward last week against the Rams. What did you see from the quarterback and the offense as a whole?
Yeah, I'll start with the non-Caleb part of it first. I actually thought the run game looked a little bit more interesting. I thought they did a better job of spring Swift to the outside, kind of mixing up their run concepts. They went with a little bit more split zone this week, which I think helped them cut some plays back, which I think was good. So them getting a little bit of life out of the run game that had looked really, really bad for the first 3 weeks, I thought was pretty encouraging. And it kind of helped keep them out of those obvious passing downs. And I think because of that, it allowed Caleb to play a little bit better. And I think with each passing week, I've just been more and more impressed with Caleb. They are not dumbing this offense down for him like they do for a lot of rookies. Like, they're really making him play real NFL quarterback. And I think obviously you have a couple of hiccups here and there because he's a rookie. Every now and then maybe he'll hold the ball a beat too long. But I think for the most part, he's doing an awesome job pre-snap, like setting some of the protections, pointing out the mic. He knows where to go with the football. He's been more accurate as the weeks go on. You still want to see a few more of those deep shots connect, but I think at every other area of the field he's been accurate. So I've just been really impressed with the way that he's handled the offense and continues to build on it every single week. So I'm really excited to see where we get another month from now and see how much more he's handling and how much more he's executing.
Derek, obviously we talk a lot of Bears here, and I'm sure we'll get back to that in just a moment, but I'm excited to have an NFL guy to talk about a team that's been driving me nuts for 7 months now, and I'm curious what your reaction to it is, as, an athletic NFL coverage expert. I pretty much predicted the Dallas Cowboys were going to be as bad as they are right now, 1-3. You could see it coming, I thought, throughout the offseason. A lot of people are acting like this is some shock or big surprise. I'm curious what you thought of what you expected from the Cowboys this year, where they're at right now, and if there's any chance they get this turned around this season.
I think it's hard to see where they would turn it around. Offensively, I think they are exactly what I thought they were. I think Dak being on the field is going to get you efficient passing offense just by nature of him being out there. I mean, he handles protections really well. The way that he makes decisions is really good. He makes really aggressive throws that you need to make at a high level. So I think he does that. The problem is the run game is not efficient or explosive. And in the passing game, explosives have been hard to come by because their play action game is not great. CeeDee Lamb is really the only receiver you're scared of, and they don't really get explosive plays outside of CeeDee Lamb making a miracle. And you kind of need a little bit more than that to be a great offense. So I think offensively they're okay. Defense is where I think we've had the biggest issue. I think there was a world where Mike Zimmer could come in, could get these guys to play a little bit more sound, a little bit more just to their gaps and not so crazy as they were under Dan Quinn. And that has just not been the case. And I think it's not necessarily Zimmer's fault. I think we're just seeing that they really don't have the horses. I don't think they've gotten as good a play out of their defensive tackles as they wanted. Some of the moves they made at linebacker haven't really worked out. And I think it's just kind of had this trickle down effect where they just haven't found what they want to do as an identity on defense. And because they don't really have that much of the talent, I don't see how it's going to get that much better over the course of the season.
Talking with Derek Klassen, co-host of the Athletic Football Show. You can find him on Twitter at QBKlass. While we're out in the NFC East, there's a rookie quarterback out there who's surprising people And that's Jaden Daniels. Is it fair? I just asked Hub this a few minutes ago, Derek, to look at him and look at Caleb Williams, and while knowing nothing is decided, none of this is a final product yet, and looking at those two guys, is it fair to look at them and compare and measure those two quarterbacks against each other? Because if you are, at this point, Bears fans aren't feeling great about the way that those first and second picks played out.
So I want to start by saying Jaden Daniels is obviously playing really well. He's making good decisions. He's obviously incredibly accurate. He's been, the throw that he made to win that Bengals game was obviously incredible. And then what he's doing with his legs is incredible. What I will say is that, you know, kind of like I mentioned with Caleb, they're really making Caleb Williams play like NFL 10-year veteran type of quarterback play and really making him do a lot pre-snap and putting a lot on his shoulders post-snap. That's not really the case with Washington and Jaden Daniels. You know, they are simplifying it a little bit for him, doing a little bit more to get guys in motion and just have some easier routes for him to throw. And he's doing a really, really good job of executing it. He's obviously not making mistakes. His timing is good. But they are kind of simplifying the game for him a little bit, which you should do for most rookies. But I do think Caleb is one of those few guys where you can throw a lot on his shoulders and kind of just see what sticks. And I think if there was a situation where Jaden Daniels was playing in Chicago and they were asking him to play the way that Caleb is being asked to play, I don't think Jaden would look nearly as good in Chicago as he does right now in Washington.
You know, yeah, we also have to throw in the Washington schedule hasn't exactly been a killer. So I need a few more weeks before I can get too excited about where they're at. But I'm very excited about Jaden Daniels, what we've seen so far, because he obviously is a very good young quarterback who may be a great quarterback. And we're going to learn more about that going forward. I want to go back. You know, Dallas is just one team that jumps out. Now, Miami is another team that if Tua doesn't get hurt, they're probably not 1-3. But they've been an ugly 1-3. And this is another team. I think both the Dolphins and the Cowboys spent too much time during the offseason worrying about new contracts for a couple of key veterans and not focusing on the rest of the roster. And not knowing if they're going to get Tua back, I can answer my own question. I don't see the Dolphins turning it around this year.
I don't think so either, because the truth of the matter is they didn't look that good with Tua towards the end of last season. And even early this season before Tua got hurt, you know, they did not play very well in that Jaguars game, I think in week one, until they got just like two busted coverages where, you know, one to Jalen Waddle and one to Tyreek Hill. But otherwise, like on the down to down basis, they didn't look very good. And then they didn't look very good against Buffalo before Tua got hurt. So I think that is certainly a concern. My issue with Miami is it seems like every year since McDaniel's been there, they've leaned a little bit more into speed, and like they just keep doubling down and tripling down on this idea of being the fastest and lightest team in the league. And at a certain point, it feels like they've kind of over-indexed into that a little bit too much. Like their offensive line is too light. They don't really have a guy that you can bang between the tackles in the run game. You know, they don't really have many dirty work receivers. And I think it's kind of just gotten to the point where teams have figured out the only way that they want to play. They've only got one pitch, and it's definitely hurting them.
You know, I understand exactly what's happened with Dallas and Miami, and none of it is all that shocking. But the team that I can't figure out is the Philadelphia Eagles, because one week they're the team that we think they are, and then the next week they stink, or not stink, but then they can't even play with teams that shouldn't be in their league. What's going on there?
You know, my take on that is I think the offensive design and the quarterback doesn't really mesh. You know, Kellen Moore, think about the last two quarterbacks that Kellen Moore was coaching with. It's Dak Prescott and it's Justin Herbert. Those are two guys that handle a lot pre-snap. They're really good post-snap processors. They can go 1, 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 and get through all their stuff. That's never really been what Jalen Hurts is. He's been more of an RPO or 1 to 2 to check down or 1 just throw a vertical shot to A.J. Brown. And he's really accurate and effective in that sense. But I think the offense, you know, Kellen Moore hasn't been able to call the plays that he wants. And I don't think Hurts has handled, you know, some of the protection responsibilities that have come with Jason Kelsey no longer being in the lineup. So I think they've struggled there. And that's kind of why it looks uneasy at times. At the same time, when all of their guys are healthy and when they have A.J. Brown on the field, Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert, there are just some times against some teams where the talent is so overwhelming that even if the offensive design isn't all that cohesive, they're kind of just better. And that's kind of a nice fail-safe to have. But I think when we get to the end of the season, it's going to be tricky against some of the best teams.
Talking with Derek Klassen of the Athletic Football Show here on the Score Evening Show with Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish. Hub has brought up a couple of disappointing teams. The flip side of that coin right here in the NFC North with Minnesota 4-0 for a team that lot of people thought would be sort of a transition year for them. Maybe Sam Darnold will start a few games, then J.J. McCarthy would take the reins. But obviously, J.J. McCarthy is not in the equation this season. And it looks like Sam Darnold is playing pretty high-level football at quarterback, and they sit at 4-0.
I've honestly been more impressed with Kevin O'Connell necessarily than yes. than Sam Darnold. You know, I think Darnold has done a nice job of operating the offense. He's obviously playing much cleaner than he has in years past, and he's a really accurate thrower. I mean, he's always been talented, right? He's always had, it's more just of, can we get the boneheaded mistakes out of him? And I think to some degree they have. You know, Darnold used to have, what, 7 of those boneheaded plays a game? Now he's only got 2. And that's, I think, been a big reason of why this has been able to work. I also think, you know, coming into the season, I didn't know if Minnesota's run game was going to be that good. And obviously with the, you know, McVay, Shanahan style of offense that Kevin O'Connell runs, you really need the run game to get going. And I think because they've done that, it's they've been able to protect Sam Darnold a little bit with some play action shots and staying in some nice down and distances for him. So long as they keep doing that, and so long as Brian Flores keeps terrorizing the other quarterback on the other side, which I think he's going to keep doing, this is a team that I think is pretty serious.
Yeah, I don't think Minnesota knew their running game was going to be that good until they got there. But I'll tell you, any quarterback with 11 touchdowns and 3 picks, he's my guy. He's the guy I want. And whatever's happened in the past, the Vikings made the right decision to get ready for J.J. McCarthy, and they didn't know at that point that the decision was going to be their new starter.
I think it's kind of been a pleasant surprise for them as well. And I really don't think that they knew they would get as few of the boneheaded plays, you know, out of Sam Darnold's game as they have. And I think that's really been the big thing. And so I trust Kevin O'Connell, really. I think he's been a great coach for us as long as he's been there. And again, so long as the offensive line and run game is there to protect Sam Darnold a little bit. And obviously so long as Justin Jefferson's on the field to give him a failsafe, like, there's really not much reason for me to doubt that this can continue, even though, you know, if you look at every other year of Sam Darnold's career, you probably wouldn't think it'll continue.
Speaking of offenses functioning with veteran quarterbacks who many had written off, the Bears will see one this week with Carolina and Andy Dalton. That offense looks like it's functioning at a higher level than it did with Bryce Young since he's been in there. What have you seen from that Carolina offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think what you really notice, and I think you especially notice this the first week that Dalton was playing against the Las Vegas Raiders, there are just like real deal NFL veteran quarterback throws that are on the field now. Like some of the dig routes that Andy Dalton is willing to throw, some of just like the deep out routes, some of like the seam routes, you know, these balls that you have to get a certain level of, you know, you have to control the arc, you have to put enough zip on it. Bryce Young just didn't really have the arm talent to make a lot of those throws, at least not consistently. And I think especially this year, he actually kind of lost confidence in making a lot of those throws. You know, you could see it in flashes the first year where, you know, maybe he would try to make this throw with really good timing and every now and then it would work. I think the first couple of games this year, all of that confidence died, and he just doesn't have the natural talent to kind of lean back and find some other stuff when he's not super confident in all the play calling. So I think them just getting a veteran guy like Andy Dalton in there, who's just bigger, has a better arm, is pretty decent athlete, you know, for a guy who's like, you know, over the 30 hill age at this point. So I think he's just added a level of stability that they just didn't have in the offense beforehand.
I don't know if this is fair or not. I should have warned you about this question before I ask it, but I'm guessing that you'll have at least a thought. Which team that we're not talking about right now do you think has the best chance to make a run and to be a significant factor when we get closer to playoff time?
Oh man, that is a great question. I don't know about a significant run, but you know, the more I actually watch the Pittsburgh Steelers, the more I'm kind of buying in, and I think there's actually some more meat on the bone with what they're doing offensively. You know, they haven't been that great on offense, but you know, they kind of built this thing to run the ball and to bootleg and get these play action shots with Justin Fields. And in reality, they haven't run the ball all that well. And he's actually been a decent drop back passer, you know, no play action, no screens, all that stuff. And so I think if they can get their offensive line a little bit healthier, you know, they've had 3 guys out of the lineup in this last week. And so they can get a little bit healthier up there, get to maybe just an average run game where the structure of this offense starts to work and be what they want it to be. I actually think they can be a pretty feisty team because, you know, as long as Tomlin is the coach and TJ Watt's on, you know, on the field, they're going to be a really good defense as well. So I kind of like what Pittsburgh is building.
Well, and that's an interesting story, obviously, here in Chicago because of Justin Fields. But does it I don't want to say bother, but does it make you wonder at all that Mike Tomlin still hasn't named his starting quarterback for the Sunday? I mean, you know, everybody is making a big deal out of what Justin has done there. If you study his stats, other than not throwing interceptions, they're exactly the same as they were in Chicago. And Tomlin, as recently as last night, mentioned a couple concerns about Fields and said that, you know, he's still waiting to know where Wilson is at health-wise.
Yeah, I mean, Fields definitely isn't perfect. I do think the no interception or the fewer interceptions thing is an important note, though. You know, this is a guy who I think is certainly making fewer mistakes, and he's a little bit more confident right now. You know, you guys know this, in Chicago, he used to just scramble like way too early and way too often in plays, and he's not really doing that right now in Pittsburgh. And so he still has two or three plays a game where maybe he misses a blitz that he needed to replace and he should have thrown it. And, you know, even though he takes fewer of those ugly sacks, he still takes one or two a game. You know, he had a really bad one in that Colts game. And so I think there is reason to be frustrated over some of those plays. He's still not a perfect player. I just think that Russell Wilson is also going to make those mistakes. And I don't think right now he's as explosive a player as Justin Fields can be. So I don't know why they're not naming a guy, but I would probably lean towards Fields.
What do you see in this matchup Sunday between the Bears and Panthers? One thing that makes you feel good about the Bears' chances, and maybe one thing we should be worried about here in Chicago?
You know, I think for as decent as Dalton has looked, I think this Bears defense is really, really good. And I think their secondary in particular is going to really be able to close the windows on a lot of these Panthers receivers and really make Dalton make a lot of really high level throws. And, you know, again, he's been more competent than the quarterback play they were getting the last, you know, 17, 18 games. I just don't know if he's going to be able to fit enough tight window throws against a defense like this for it to matter. And then on the flip side, that Carolina defense is not that good. And I think this is actually a pretty nice opportunity for Caleb to have a game where he settles in even further and really starts to make some confident throws, stand in the pocket, which, by the way, I think he did a really great job of last week. You could almost see he was like too intentional about staying in the pocket and sliding up and trying to make tough throws. So I think this is another good week to just kind of build on that.
That is Derek Klassen. Check him out in the Athletic Football Show on Twitter at QB Class. That's Class with a K. And our guest for the last few minutes on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Derek, we appreciate the time and the insight, my man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys.
Again, check him out on the Athletic Football Show and on Twitter at QB Class. Go back to your calls, your texts on the Bears and the Panthers this Sunday, 312-644-6767. Also, some changes may be coming to the world of football. We'll talk about that with Hub. That's next. It's the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score.
We're back with more Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish on 670. The Score.
That's us. We're with you until 9 o'clock. Rami Makhlouf, Hub Arkish, talking lots of Bears and Panthers. We'll get back to your calls in just a moment, but Hub, there was news today, and this will affect how you do your job. You're down at Halas Hall in that Bears locker room just about every day, and today the Players Association announced that they would like to see changes to locker room policy in terms of the open locker room, how interviews are conducted. They put out this in a statement. The NFLPA did. Players feel that locker room interviews invade their privacy and are uncomfortable. This isn't about limiting media access, but about respecting players' privacy and dignity. We, the NFLPA Executive Committee, urge the NFL to make immediate changes to foster a more respectful and safer workplace for all players. Ted Karras, the Bengals offensive lineman and player representative, he was the one who sort of brought this forth for the Players Association, and here's him talking about it a little bit.
As you've heard from a couple teams now, and the NFLPA is going to come out with a statement, in an effort to protect the sanctity of the locker room and the comfort of the players, each team is going to figure out a program to where we conduct our interviews outside of the locker room. Now, this doesn't bar you from the locker room. We can't do that. But what we want to do is get cameras off guys in private moments in our locker rooms. So I've been working with Emily, I've been working with PJ, and I'm going to work with you guys to figure out the best solution so that you guys get the content you need. The sanctity of the locker room is protected, and this is what our membership wants, to feel more comfortable in a private space that is the locker room. So if you guys have any questions about it, please come to me and ask. We want to make this as smooth as possible. What brought it to light was a couple guys naked on camera this year. I know that's happened a few times. you know, throughout the history of the league. But this will not affect game day, I don't think. But, you know, we're going to come up with a good solution to make the week as smooth as possible, get everyone the time they need, and, again, protect the sanctity of the locker room.
It makes sense, Hub, and honestly, I'm surprised that that doesn't happen more often in terms of guys in private moments getting caught on camera, especially now there are more cameras than there have ever been. So I understand the request. The writer, Pro Football Writers of America, put out a statement. NFL players asking to speak outside the locker room has always been a part of the league's media access policy. We are continuing discussions with the NFLPA executives regarding the media access policy. The goal is to make everyone comfortable in locker room settings and to have players and clubs follow the NFL media policy. Like I said, it makes sense to me on the outside looking in, Hub, to find some sort of compromise where you guys that are down there in the locker room every day can do your jobs, but the players also feel a sense of privacy and a sense of you know, that there's some sanctity in the locker room, and that's their place to have some peace and some privacy. How do you feel about this proposed change?
Well, it depends on, and first of all, most importantly, it depends on what the change really is, what they're really looking for or asking for. And you know, I think anybody can understand, I don't want pictures of me being taken naked in a locker room.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a very simple answer. This is not complicated. And also, I can tell you, this is not the real reason that the players are complaining about this, because the answer is very simple. Just no cameras allowed in the locker room. Don't change anything. Just take the cameras out of the locker room.
So just everything's audio or written.
If that was the problem, you know, if that's what they're upset about, I got no problem with them taking the cameras out of the locker room. What happened is apparently a picture of George Kittle's butt ended up on social media, and naked butt. And that's when this all started a week or two ago. And now they're trying to make it sound like a bigger problem than it really is. I've been doing this for 45 years. I've been in every one of the 32 NFL locker rooms, and I've never had a single player complain to me about media being in the locker room. You know, it's not a problem with them. It's not a problem for the media. I can see where, you know, inappropriate pictures absolutely would be a problem, but it's really easy to fix. No cameras in the locker room. Just keep doing your jobs the way you do it, but take the cameras out, and this won't happen again.
Like he said, they don't anticipate, nor are they trying to change things on game day. That this is a day-to-day issue.
They can't change things on game day, because the only chance you get to talk to players at the most important point of the week is maybe 15 to 20 minutes after the game in the locker room.
Right.
After that, the visiting team is racing to get to their trucks so they can get to the, you know, their planes and get back home. And the home team just wants to go home, you know? So it's like saying we're going to eliminate post-game, you know, interviews. You can't do that. So, you know, they're making more of this than they think they should. And I don't think anybody in the media would complain if we simply said, okay, no cameras in the locker room.
Let's say that these changes go forward. As far as the everyday and the practice locker rooms, could you do your job as thoroughly, as well as you do now, if they change the policy and they said, okay, instead of open locker room, we're going to have these guys in this area of Halas Hall, wherever that might be? You know the place much better than I do. We're going to have these players in this area of Halas Hall. They'll be available to the media in this window of time. So it would be like open locker room, but just somewhere else where it's not the locker room. It's just somewhere else in the facility. Would that hinder you at all? Would that change how you do your job, how well you do your job as somebody who goes down and covers the team on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it definitely would hinder us, because the teams can't force their players to go to another room. They can't say, all right, you got to leave the locker room now and go to this room to be where the interviews are being done. And a lot of players aren't going to go along with that. They're just not going to do that. And I understand that. I wouldn't want to either. And again, I get to, are we making much ado about nothing? Are we making too big a deal out of something that is easily fixed just by taking the cameras out of the locker room?
I would imagine there would be pushback from TV networks if that.
Oh, I'm sure there
case.
Would be.
Yeah,
and that's tough. You know, that's their problem. That's not our problem. I work for TV networks.
Sure,
but you know, that's the whether the TV networks like it or not. I understand why the players don't want pictures of them unclothed being taken,
yeah,
and then posted on social media. No, that's a very fair complaint. But that is not the only reason that the players are trying to make these changes. Players try and get.
Do they just not want to talk to you guys?
Some don't. You know?
Okay.
And all of them want to get as much flexibility as they can.
Sure.
And they have a lot more flexibility if we're not let into the locker room.
That makes sense. That does make sense. It'll be interesting to see how it goes down and how how much this changes the landscape of the NFL and the media coverage of it.
Yeah, I don't think there can be or are going to be any changes until after this season. When they get to work on it during the offseason, they've got to come up with a suggestion that is acceptable to the media or this is going to become a fight. And I haven't heard any suggestion yet as to what they want the new rule to be. You know, and that's why I'm saying it's really pretty simple. Just take the cameras out of the locker room and then there won't be any problem.
Well, I think the idea is, and it sounded like this is what Ted Karras was describing, along the lines of what I'm saying to you, Hub, of the PR team of whatever football franchise it is we're talking about, making arrangements for you guys to have access to players and then players agreeing to it and living up to it. Because like you just said, they don't have to. The only time they're obligated right now or the only time you can sort of catch them and you know where they're going to be is in the locker room. But if the teams, and it's a lot of heavy lifting and it's a lot of coordination for these teams to do it, if they arrange for these players to be available somewhere else and the players agree to it and live up to it, I think that's what the players are aiming for. It sounded like that's what Ted Karras was describing right there. But again, that's a lot of heavy lifting, and it requires the players to agree to it and then live up to it, because those are two very different things. To say, yeah, I'll do that, and then the day comes to do it, and they're like, hey, we need you over here to do these interviews. And they're like, I don't feel like doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you right now where the media's complaints are going to come from, and they couldn't be more valid, which is, if they're going to suggest a situation where after practice or after games, all 53 players on the roster have to go to another area to be available for interviews, then the media isn't going to have anything to complain about because they're getting the same thing. But there's no way that they're suggesting they do that or that they're going to make that happen. And it absolutely is going to hurt the media's ability to do their jobs. If you can only get the 7 or 8 players that each team brings to a different room to be interviewed,
right?
Because that's not the same thing. You know, you can't get the whole team. And so I think that the players probably put this out there before they had figured out what the potential problems with it are. And I want to hear what the suggestions are going to be that are going to work, because I haven't heard any yet.
We'll see how it plays out. Meanwhile, we'll get back to some Bears talk with you. 312-644-6767. We got some folks that have been waiting online patiently. Sean, should I take calls and then break, or break and then take calls? I'll leave this one up to you. What do you
think? Let's take a call. We can take one.
Let's go to Drew in Des Moines. Drew, you're on 670 to score. What's up?
Hey, I just want to talk about Doug Kramer and Roschon Johnson. When we seemed to get them in the game, things happened. And then for once, actually, when we had success, Waldron called the same play again, 3rd and 1, and put them in. You think we're going to see that anymore? You think we're going to see some Kramer and Roschon again, or you think that was 2 and done?
Well, I'm sure you'll see some of it, but whether that's going to be, you know, a game plan and whether they're going to be doing it regularly on a number of situations, I wouldn't go that far. Roschon Johnson is a very different type of running back than DeAndre Swift or Khalil Herbert. And he's your power guy. He's your third down guy. He's your strength guy. But he's not going to be as likely to create the big play for you as the other two are. And so I think using all three appropriately is obviously the goal. And I think what they have to do is give the ball to Justin Herbert more often, because he is the best runner with the ball.
Khalil Herbert. You said, Justin Herbert.
Give the ball to him more often, too.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. Appreciate the call, Jeff. But also the thing is, Doug, I mean, this league, word travels fast. Everybody in this league now has that formation and that play on tape. You're not going to surprise anybody with it. You're not going to catch anybody off guard with it. That Kramer, Roschon, what did Olin call it? God's play? Is that what he called
God's
it?
God's play. God's power O.
That power O, that's on tape now. Teams know that you have that in your tool belt, and they'll, not to say that they'll be ready for it every time. I mean, Philadelphia does the tush push every time they have a short yard situation. Teams know it's coming and they still can't stop it, but they'll be more prepared for it in the future than maybe what they were last week.
If other teams are that upset about the tush push because the Eagles are so good at it, then they should do it too.
Really.
To me, it's really that simple. No, I'm not. It's not clear to me why defenses haven't figured out a way to stop that yet. They will, but they haven't yet. And teams that are complaining about it, take advantage of it. You know. I mean, I don't know what other answer you're going to get.
Let's go to Bucktown and Jeff. You're on 670 The Score. What you got, Jeff?
Yeah. Hey guys, how we doing?
Great.
Good.
Hub, you're a legend. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. Too kind.
Hey, quick question for you guys. I heard the announcers mention it last game, and then my buddy who played in the NFL for 4 or 5 years for the Seahawks even mentioned it. But talked about Caleb Williams and his lack of depth in his dropbacks. Have you guys seen that and noticed it in the game so far this year? Because they even mentioned it, like I said, on the game last week. So I'm interested to hear your...
You know, the honest answer is no, I haven't noticed that. And part of it is because he's not throwing all that much from under center. He's usually in the, already back, you know, when they're going to pass. But that said, again, I haven't really noticed that. And it is something I will watch this weekend because now you've made me curious.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that either, Hub. I have noticed, and I've seen other people point this out. Brian Baldinger, who watches tape and breaks it down, does a great job of it. I haven't noticed, or at least haven't taken issue with the depth of his drops, whether they're too shallow or not. But there does, and I was talking earlier about if you need 1 yard or 2 yards, just line up some big boys and move forward and try and get the 1 or 2 yards. When they find themselves in those third and medium situations, if it's 4, 5, or 6 yards, it seems they have a tendency to run 8 and 9 and 10 yard routes instead of running routes that get them to the sticks and just finding the openings and sitting in them. That's been, if any, issue with the depth of his drops, how long he's dropping back or waiting back there. That would be the one issue I would take in that regard. But again, like you said earlier, it's hard to pick apart play calling because you don't know the whole picture or what they're trying to show a defense to set something up for later, whatever the case might be. But that would be the one issue that I would take with the depth of the drops.
You know, what we do know is that Caleb Williams is not nearly the runner that Justin Fields is.
Right, yeah.
And so that for the offensive line, this is totally different now as to how they're setting everything up. And I'm guessing that maybe they are trying to keep Williams a little closer to the line in case he does have to run, because it may help him a little bit, whereas with Fields, the further back he was, the better chances he had, because once he got by that first guy, he was taking off. But I think it is mainly just the continued development of Caleb Williams and getting him in the places you want him to be.
You're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT, It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. And before Chicago takes on Carolina, tune in Sunday morning from 9 to noon for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Join Olin Kreutz, Patrick Manley, and Lawrence Holmes in for Mully this week. They'll get you set for the game live from Wonderverse in Oak Brook. Then immediately following the game, Lawrence, Olin, and Manley will have instant reaction from Wonderverse on the Great Clips postgame show, presented by Sony Pictures, Wonderverse Chicago, and Timber Tech Decking and Railing. All of it heard right here on The Score and on the Odyssey app. That's Hub Arkish. I'm Rami Makhlouf. We got one more segment for you on The Score Evening Show right here, right after this.
The mini fridge.
Too much contact. And now we got Jumbo with Kramer in the backfield.
The mini fridge. Kramer, the fullback. The give to Johnson. And the Bears have tied the game after the takeaway.
Obviously something different being lined up in the backfield. But, you know, that position's a lot of fun. You know, you get to be aggressive and come downhill. And, you know, obviously a little bit different than the inline center position. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun being out there.
We're back with more Rami Makhlouf and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
Love the mini fridge. That's the highlight courtesy of Fox. Doug Kramer joining the guys on Spiegel and Holmes right here on 670 The Score to talk about it. And like we were saying in the last segment, Hub, that's, I don't know if it's, you know, going to be a regular fixture of the offense, and I don't know that it needs to be, but I've been hard on Shane Waldron, and it's only been 4 weeks, but for whatever you could say about an offensive coordinator in the three prior weeks, I probably said it, you know what I mean? But there was progress in that game. It wasn't up to the level I'd hoped or expected. And when you look at the totality of how the offense performed, but as far as Shane Waldron goes, I liked what I saw in last week's game better than what I've seen in any of the previous three games.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that he did get things turned around a bit last week. They did make an improvement. I just think it's been a kind of a strange first 4 weeks with Shane Waldron, and I'm not sure that we know enough about him yet. I think we're learning every week. I think we learned some good stuff this week with what we saw, but I think we still have more to learn before we should really form any final or long-term conclusions about him.
Even when I've been critical of him or really anything as far as this season goes, I've cushioned it with, I know it's not a finished product, and maybe they get where I wanted or expected them to get before the season is over, but the line I keep coming back to is it doesn't look as good as I thought it would by now. Not because I thought it would be the finished product or they would reach their ceiling by now. I just thought it would look better by week four than what we saw last week.
And keep in mind, even though the whole thing is a new team for him, that the whole offense is dealing with a new quarterback, a new running back, two new wide receivers, a new number two tight end, you know, and they haven't started the same offensive line yet, you know, from week to week. So again, in evaluating Waldron, we got to give it a little more time and learn a little bit more. I'm not even saying he needs more time. We need to learn more about him and what he's trying to do before we really know if we're happy with it or not.
All right, Hub. Sunday, Bears, Panthers, noon on Fox. How do you see this one playing out?
You know, the Bears haven't really blown anybody up yet, so I'm not going to expect them to do it this weekend either. I do think the Bears get a win here. I think they're the better team. I think the offense is going to play better. I expect the same type of improvement from last week to this week from the Bears' offense as we saw last week from the week before. So I haven't really been picking scores, but I do think the Bears get a win here, and I do think it's more than a one-score win. I think that they're going to play – be more impressive on offense this week.
Okay, so you think, even though you're not picking a score, it sounds like you'd pick them to cover the 4 points or 5 points that they're favored right now.
I can pick a score if somebody wants me to make one up. I'd say it's going to be the Bears 27 and the Panthers 17.
That's around the neighborhood that I was going to land in with my prediction. I said it earlier in the show. I want to see a legitimate step forward, not a baby step. I want to see a legitimate step forward, and I'm talking about the offense. Honestly, as far as the defense goes, This is one of the greater challenges that they'll face to this point in the season. Because when you look at what they saw in L.A. last week, that wasn't the Stafford McVay Rams that we thought it would be when we saw that game on the schedule. I thought that was one of the tougher games in the first half of the schedule. But with no Puka Nacua, no Cooper Kupp, all the other injuries that they were dealing with, it wasn't, like I said, the Rams team that we were expecting them to face when we saw that on the schedule. We talked with, I'm drawing a blank on his name, Kyle Bailey earlier from WFNZ in Charlotte. He talked about how good that offensive line has looked, and especially since Andy Dalton got in there. This will be the biggest test that defensive line, that defensive front, that pass rush has faced yet, and they've looked pretty good through the first four games and exceeded expectations. Really, when you talk about everybody but Montez Sweat, they've exceeded expectations, but this will be a test in getting through that offensive line and getting to Andy Dalton. As far as that offense goes, they should be able to move the football, Hub, and they should be able to put up points. Panthers 29th in pass pressure at 25.6%. They also have not been good when you look at their last in the league in scoring defense, 28th in total defense, 29th against the run. They should be able to build on what they did last week and like I said, take a legitimate step forward. Not a baby step, but a legitimate step forward. I want 27-30 points from this offense and like 400 total yards or more.
And I would say it's almost as simple as if the Panthers cannot create consistent pressure, they don't have to get 11 sacks, but if they can't create consistent pressure, Caleb Williams is going to have a big day.
The recipe is there for Caleb Williams and that offense to have a big day. They don't get to quarterbacks. They don't have a great secondary. They've given up yards. They've given up points. They've given up points in the passing game, then in the running game. The recipe is there for this offense to sort of break out and have that type of game.
What's been the biggest complaint so far? No deep balls. If they can't get pressure, you're going to see deep balls this week.
I want to see that. And I want to see that offensive line show some improvement and take a step forward as well. So like I said, I want to see 27-30 points from that offense and a good complete performance from we haven't seen them play four good quarters yet. You know, you look at last week and maybe the best performance that they've had, it took them 2.5 quarters to break through and put together those two good drives that eventually ended up being the difference in the game. I want to see four good quarters of football from that offense. I want to see him put up some points. If they get the ball late in the game with a chance to close it out like they did last week, I'd like to see him do that. That's what good offenses do. It's not always just about putting up points. Sometimes it's about putting the foot on the throat and ending your opponent and winning that game. I would like to see him show that ability to do that. And like I said, the opportunity is there. The recipe is there for them to be able to do it. I'll be disappointed if they don't. I said this earlier in the show, Hub. if they don't only win, but sort of impress me in this football game from an offensive standpoint.
I think one other thing I'd really like to see this weekend is another big play or two from DeAndre Swift. I want to see a big play or two from Keenan Allen, and I want to see a big play or two from Roman Dunze. If all three of those guys can do that in one game, then this offense is going to be functioning the way we expected it to be when we saw how they reloaded it.
So you said 27-17?
That's what I said.
Okay, just to be a little different, I'll go 30-20. I'll say 30-20, Bears beat the Panthers this Sunday, and I'll be happy with that. That's an offense that's been able to move the football the last couple of weeks. And like I said, really good offensive line, Andy Dalton seems to be a calming, steadying presence for that offense. So they might be able to move the ball. The Bears should just be able to move the ball a little bit better and score a few more times. Our thanks to Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times for joining us, Kyle Bailey of WFNZ in Charlotte, and Derek Klassen of the Athletic Football Show. You can hear all those at 670thescore.com or on your Odyssey app if you missed that. Thanks to Sean Sears on the other side of the glass for lining this thing up and handling the ones and twos all night long. And thanks to you for all your contributions via the phones, the text line. Hub, always a pleasure. My man, we will do it again soon, I'm sure.
I will look forward to that.
I'll be back Wednesday. Do you know next time you're on the air here on The Score?
I'm on twice next week. I just can't remember which day.
Okay, I'll be here Wednesday in this very time slot. I'll talk to you then. Until then, we thank you for listening to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.